Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by the one and only BJ Thomas as we mark the 50th anniversary of Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head. Hey, BJ, thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you, Jason. I'm glad to be here.
Now, I know the movie, it was made for the movie Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, which came out in like December of 69, but, you know, the song really took off in 1970, so that's why we're here, 50 years, 2020 here. Can you believe it's been 50 years, man?
Well, you know, I really can. I mean, there's been so much drama and the ups and downs and, you know, good and bad, like anybody's life. So I do get the sense that it's been a good piece of time. Although now that it's here, it seems to have gotten here pretty quickly. But, yeah, you know, it's a distinct high point for me. I mean, the song came out in October of 69, and it wasn't until the movie came out as a Christmas release in 69 that the radio went on the record. They had kind of resisted the record because it sounded different to them. And there was a lot of resistance to the song, really. But the movie was so good that it kicked off the song, and then by January 3rd of 1970, it was number one. So a great experience for me.
Absolutely. Talk about, you know, the genius of the songwriting in that, you know, you had Burt Bacharach, Hal Davis,
oh,
legends.
Yeah.
You know, talk about how great were they, and sort of the idea that I like how you personify the sun, and you're like you accuse it of sleeping on the job in the second. It's just like, but talk about why the songwriting's so good.
Well, yeah, that of course was Hal David, and you know, they had Hal and I had many conversations about that song, as well as I've talked with Bert about it many times too. But they had asked Hal to write a frivolous song. Just kind of a throwaway song, and he said, you know, BJ, I don't write frivolous songs. So he did write something that seemingly on the surface was kind of not saying much, but, you know, in the long run and the way people accepted it, it was saying a pretty meaningful, and in fact, a very meaningful thing that, you know, the rain falls on you, but if you're free, nothing's worrying you, you know. So it said a kind of a distinctly American thing, but it said a great thing, and people identified with it. And of course, you know, Burt Bacharach is, you know, obviously one of the greatest composers of all time, and just the way he composed that melody was, you know, it was a unique, different melody. And I knew instinctively, I had been working with Mr. Bacharach for a couple of months in New York, trying to find some material. We wanted to do a session. You know, he was heavily involved with Dionne Warwick, the Scepter Records, the label I was on. And I was selling records out, excuse me, sorry, my throat's a little... I was selling records. I just had hooked on a feeling, and the label asked me to move to New York, and they wanted me to work with Bert, and I was anxious to do that. And, you know, we were going looking for songs, but really hadn't found anything yet. And then the score and the thing with Butch Cassidy came up, the bicycle scene, and so there it was, and kind of was an obvious choice. And I kind of instinctively knew from the get-go that his compositions – and their songs weren't stuff that you played with. You needed to sing it as it was written. And, you know, I was able to do some vocalization and some, you know, licks maybe here and there on Raindrops. But I just sang it as much as I could exactly as he wrote it. And then, of course, on the me on the end, I had a little freedom, and I did that little thing on it. But otherwise, I was kind of sticking to the program, you know.
Awesome. Yeah, you mentioned the bicycle scene. It stands out in the movie. Some people think it's sort of like an outlier in the movie, but it all kind of works. And I think it sort of sets the tone that, you know, this isn't a typical, you know, old cynical Western you're going to watch. This thing's going to be a little, you know, upbeat buddy comedy.
You know, I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, you know, they're on the run and they finally found a hideout, and they're there with Etta Chase, and then, you know, they got some freedom, and they're riding a bicycle like normal people. And I think it makes sense. But in there, you know, what they were trying to do, and of course Redford has said this Mr. Redford has said this a number of times, that they were making an art film. And, you know, the music, the score was different. It wasn't done with instruments for the most part. It was done with a pa-pa-pa-pa, kind of that just vocalizing things. And so it was kind of a different, unique score, and the song was different. And, you know, so, okay, I'll give it to him. I think it was kind of an art film, but it was also one of the best Westerns ever made, too.
Oh, yeah, one of my favorites. Talk about the camaraderie between Robert Redford and Paul Newman in that. I mean, the way they banter back and forth, and, you know, what does he say? Drown, help, the fall will kill you. Like, they're just, the way they banter is so great, and I'm sure that's why they brought him back for the Sting, too. But talk about, you know, let's say there's maybe some younger listeners here on WTOP. Remind them just how good these two were together, all bantering off each other.
Well, you know, that was Paul Newman and Robert Redford. I mean, they're going to handle anything they're doing, and it was one of the best, you know, buddy films of all time, and it's got a lot of classic lines in it. You know, it's funny. I just recently read a book by Burt Bacharach. He said he never met Paul Newman or Robert Redford or the director, George Roy Hill, either, and I never have either, so I didn't feel as bad. I thought over the years I should have at least met those guys, and there were a couple of my shows down through the years that Mr. Redford was going to be was going to attend, but he never did quite make it. So having never met the guys, you know, they're kind of up there, you know, in the idol territory. They're one of the greatest actors we've had in the history of movies, and they pulled it off like you would expect them to.
Yeah, well, I know Paul Newman has sadly passed away, but I'm going to start the campaign for you to meet Mr. Redford. It's way overdue.
Yeah, thank
come
you,
on.
Man. Give me a hand on that.
Yeah, come on.
I played a couple of times in Park City, and wanted a private thing, and Mr. Redford's name was a placement was on a table in front, but he never came. And then I played a theater there for a couple of days called the Sundance Theater. And he was expected to attend, but he never did. And I'm sure, hey, that's Mr. Redford. He doesn't have to do anything. But I would love to have met him. But I was involved with him in a wonderful movie, and you know, so I do feel like I've met him. You know.
Yeah, you guys are all frozen in time together in that movie. All right, well, enough of Butch and Sundance. Tell me a little bit more about how you grew up, you know, in Houston, and, you know, how did you actually get into music? Like, you know, what did your folks play around the house? What kind of music? Or, you know, when did you start playing yourself?
Well, you know, excuse me. Houston was a wonderful music city, and, you know, they had all kinds of musicals. My dad loved country music. I grew up with the Grand Ole Opry and all that on the radio and that kind of thing. But when I was about 12, 13, I kind of fell in love with Jackie Wilson and Bobby Bland and people like that. And I was a huge R&B enthusiast, and I had a band when I was 15. It was not my band. It was our band, me and six, seven other guys. And we basically played R&B music, blues music, Ray Charles, Bobby Bland, Little Junior Parker, things like that, Jackie Wilson. And, you know, I've just always loved music. They tell me that I sang even when I was an infant. So I've always loved music, and I've always sung around as I grew up, and sung in church. And so I guess I was just meant to sing, and it's been wonderful.
Yeah, and you referenced it earlier, you know, one of your biggest, you know, early hits was Hooked on a Feeling in 1968. Now, a lot of our listeners remember the cover, the blue suede Ooga Chugga. But what did you make of when you heard their version versus, you know, your original version? You know, the original is always, in my mind, the best, but.
Well, I mean, I tell you, it's hard to, you know, I don't really have anything negative to say about that recording, because I think it was a great production. I think, man, I'm sorry, I just ate a brownie and it's stuck in my throat here, but, I wasn't thrilled that somebody had covered my record that soon. I thought, you know, 2.5-3 years was a little quick to cover somebody's record. My record sold 2 million copies, so I was proud of my of my record, and Reggie Young played the electric sitar and one of the classic sitar rides of all time. And so I didn't really have a problem with it. I thought it was a little quick, and it's not something I would have done, but I don't think you can deny that it was a beautiful, a great production. It was a number one record, and my buddy and one of my best friends, Mark James, wrote it, and he made a ton of money off of it, and, you know, it's all good.
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, you know, you mentioned, you know, some of your love of country music, but one of my favorite, maybe even my favorite song of yours was, "Hey, won't you play another Somebody Done Somebody Wrong?" So damn singable. I think it won.
Yeah,
you a
that's one of those songs. Yeah,
yeah.
It was actually my first. You know, I never really had any country radio play until I did "Wrong Song." It was a number one a country record as well as a number one pop record. But you know, I've always kind of, you know, I didn't feel like I wasn't country, but I never have purpose really to do country music. Not in the 80s when the music I made in the 80s after I had kind of been away from music for a number of years was purposely done to be country. But I never tried to do any one kind of music, any genre. I just kind of natural. I was kind of a product of top 40 radio where they played everything on the same station. And that's kind of the way I approached music.
Yeah, for sure. You know, what else are you working on these days? You know, what else can I maybe peg this to, that why I'm running this piece? You know, we got the 50th anniversary of Raindrops, but anything else you got in the pipeline? Or
yeah,
I guess,
well,
everything's kind of shut down right now.
Yeah, well, we're shut down now. It's a terrible time. I had a session scheduled for Muscle Shoals, Alabama, for the 15th of July that we had to put off, of course, because of the virus, and we're still all in on that, and we're going to do that as soon as we have the vaccine and we know we're safe and we're not, you know, risking our lives to get among the society. But we're going to do that. Hopefully, you know, no one really knows when we're going to be free to get out again. And it probably looks like the fall or the end of the year next year. So whenever it is, we're going into Muscle Shoals, and we're going to record some new stuff. I got some really great songs. I'm recording with Dan Penn and Billy Lawson, two great songwriters, and, you know, we're looking to do some good stuff.
For sure. Well, before we run, I know last week you just celebrated, 78th birthday, right? Happy birthday. Seth.
78 just the other day, yeah, thank you. It feels good,
What would you want people you've done it all and seen it all over 78 years. What would you want people to sort of, you know, remember you by? You know, they hear the name BJ Thomas. They think of Raindrops. They think of Wrong Song. But, you know, what you just want them to smile back thinking at your songs, or, you know, what do you want people to remember you as?
Well, man, can you cut this coughing out of this thing?
Oh, yeah. I'll cut it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, hey, you know, I just want them to remember me as a, you know, I really don't know. I don't put a lot of stuff on what people think about me. I know that I hope they think of me as somebody who really believed what he was singing. It's all about soul and emotion to me. So I've tried to put that in. I've tried to record things that I really believe and that I really feel. And, you know, I just hope that I'm remembered as a good father, a good husband, and the music will take care of its business. I kind of, they always lump me in with my music with these light pop singers. And I never look at my career like that. I think my songs have been meaningful. I think I've done some deep, pretty meaningful songs. I don't think I'm a light pop singer, like I am interpreted to be in a lot of situations, but that's me. So I put a lot more value on the effort and the emotion I put into my music maybe than people get. But, you know, that's music. It's always about the next guy and who's new, and that's the way music is. And, you know, I like the new guys too, so be it.
Exactly. Final question. Do you think raindrops keep falling on my head will still be recognized 50 more years from now?
Well, you know, it could be. I mean, it's in the Hall of Fame. It's in the Grammy Hall of Fame, Mr. Bacharach and Hal and I and the record. So it's there to be remembered. But, you know, in music, it's, as I said, it's all about, and music is always changing, and good songs will always be good songs. But, you know, music is different. It keeps changing. There's always different guys and new ways of recording and you know, yada, yada. So if it's remembered, that's great. I hope it is, but we have to leave that to the future.
Awesome. Well, you've been generous with your time. Thank you so much, everybody. BJ Thomas on WTOP. Thank you.
Thanks for taking the time, man.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.